What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. We're back again, enjoying the offseason, even though NFL football is not being played right now. Plenty of headlines are being made across the league here in the month of May. As always, give our podcast a follow on X, TikTok, Instagram, subscribe on YouTube. You can find us at Tackles Pod on those platforms. Find us on Facebook at Between the Tackles. Find the audio version of this podcast on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a 5-star review. Set that thing to download on release. It goes a long way to helping us continue to grow this awesome platform that we're building here with the Believe Network and on this Between the Tackles podcast. Back with my good pal Manish. It's the off season, so the news cycle can be a little slow, but we got plenty to talk about tonight. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, Burge. Yeah, there's always a knucklehead coming out of the woodwork in the NFL to give us something to talk about.
You know, it seems like every week there's just something that comes out, and every time we sit here on this podcast, we're like, how dumb can you be to have the world handed to you and make stupid mistakes that the everyday person, most people, don't make? And we're going to start off this episode. We're going to start talking about probably the biggest news of the week here, and that's Packers running back Josh Jacobs found a way to get himself arrested on what was it? Today's we're recording here on Wednesday, so he got arrested on Tuesday the 26th. A few charges there. A pretty serious one involving felony strangulation and suffocation, in addition to 4 other misdemeanor charges, all related to domestic violence. Some news came out today. It appears that he was released. The DA's office is holding the charges as of now while they're doing further investigation into this incident, but even just seeing guys pop up in the news, into the arrest records or the news cycle for these wildly negative things and pretty serious offenses that you're being accused of, it's hard to see as just a decent human being. But from a professional athlete perspective, I don't know how these guys continue to find themselves in these situations.
Yeah, and I think history has shown that the NFL does take domestic violence very seriously. We spoke a week or so ago about speeding and Rashee Rice and how unfortunate that is and what that may mean for him and the Chiefs in terms of punishment, suspension. I think it's pretty clear that Josh Jacobs is going to be handed some kind of punishment at some point. Now, as you said, the district attorney has not officially charged Josh Jacobs because they're going through their research process. They arrested him because of probable cause. Josh Jacobs' attorneys have vehemently denied these charges, but 5 criminal charges from a domestic call. The NFL doesn't necessarily follow in line with what the law will do. So I, even given the perception or appearance of impropriety when it comes to domestic violence, is something that I don't believe the NFL is going to sweep under the rug. So probably does not look good for Josh Jacobs and the Green Bay Packers. Matt LaFleur came out today, and as you would expect, said that the team is going to wait for the process to play out. From a football perspective, which is obviously not nearly as important as what's actually happening in real life with Josh Jacobs and the parties involved, from a football perspective, this is a significant blow if Josh Jacobs is not going to be a part of the team for a small amount of the season or a large portion of the season. He's the workhorse running back, 28 rushing touchdowns in his 2 seasons with the Packers. Packers really don't have much in terms of depth at the position. They have Chris Brooks, Marshawn Lloyd, who was a 2024 third-round pick who's only had a handful of carries in his career. So not much to speak of in the backfield. And this is a team that has designs on making a Super Bowl run. I think Vegas has them as one of the top handful of teams in the NFC to go to the Super Bowl. So without Josh Jacobs, I certainly believe that changes the math here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Ian Rappaport was on with us last week and picked the Packers to go to the Super Bowl with his prediction. So it's interesting. just from a financial perspective for the Packers, I don't believe Josh Jacobs has any guaranteed money left in his contract. I think he's got 2 years remaining, but if any of it's guaranteed, it's not a significant amount. If he's, you know, this ends up being a significant, you know, charge, he's looking at, you know, serious penalties for this. The Packers can get out of the contract relatively cheap. They're not going to take a massive dead cap hit with this. I believe it's like $6 million and change or something like that, that the Packers would have to eat with Josh Jacobs should they go that route. But you bring up Marshawn Lloyd. Like, Marshawn Lloyd is a guy I just cut from my dynasty fantasy team because he wasn't going to get any look. And if that ends up being the case, I'm going to sit here and be like, what the hell? What the hell? My fantasy team's going to get screwed out of this now. No, I think you're right. He's going to face something from the NFL if, you know, charges materialize with this and it goes and it actually goes that route. You know, the NFL has shown that they don't really want to take this lightly. I mean, if you remember a decade ago with the whole Ray Rice incident and, you know, there were a plethora of other incidents that came out at that time that the NFL really looked bad with how they handled it, and rightfully so, because they did handle it very poorly. You know, it'll be interesting to see, watching over the next couple of days, if the DA and the police department investigation nets some additional evidence that could be really bad for Josh Jacobs. So we'll definitely be watching that. But I want to move it along here to the next headline, and this is a more, we'll call it a more positive, you know, news headline for the NFL this year, this offseason. And that is Myles Garrett in the Cleveland Browns situation, you know, kind of unfolding here. Myles Garrett's not present. Wow, I must have said president there. Present at workouts up there in Cleveland. And there's been some interesting reporting that's kind of come out on that subject, kind of starting to build the buzz that maybe Myles Garrett could be seeing a trade at some point during the offseason. Burt Breer came out with some comments, you know, kind of showing that if Cleveland was smart, given their timeline of their draft picks and, you know, where they sit as a franchise, why wouldn't Cleveland want to seriously explore moving Myles Garrett for what would essentially be a massive haul at this point as he continues to, you know, get older in his career?
It is fascinating because he's 30 years old. You wouldn't anticipate that the Browns would turn things around over the next year or two. I could be wrong, because a lot of these quote-unquote rebuilds happen pretty quickly around the league. Like the Patriots. Patriots are a perfect example. It seems like only the New York Jets take 15-plus years to rebuild. But, you know, Breer makes a good point. Where Garrett is in his career arc doesn't necessarily align with where the Browns are in terms of being viable, being competitive, right? Todd Monken is in his first season. He did come out and say that he has not had a face-to-face conversation with Myles Garrett. I don't necessarily take too much stock in that. Mm-hmm. However, I've always believed, and I've said this in the past, I've always believed that your star players, your leaders, should be at these voluntary offseason workouts when you have a new head coach. It sets the right tone, the right example. I think we saw that with the Ravens on day one. I believe that Lamar Jackson was present for Baltimore's offseason workouts. You don't have to go to everyone. Perfect attendance is not mandatory, but in the early portion of the offseason program, when you have a new guy in charge, the leaders really should be there. And Myles Garrett, evidently is in Asia, according to Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com. He's traveling. You can do that. That's fine. But I think that it would make sense for the Browns to at least entertain what they could get in return for Garrett. And that's a tough thing to ask when you're talking about a two-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year, the reigning Defensive Player of the Year. But again, I think his age plays a big role. What's fascinating to me is when he break down his contract, he's entering the second year of his four-year, $160 million extension that he signed. He signed through 2030. But if you look a little bit closer at what Garrett and the Browns did this offseason, you might get a window into this reality. They are open to moving him. And the little tweak in his contract was his $29 million or so option bonus that was supposed to be exercised in March got pushed back to 7 days before the start of the regular season. And that would give the Browns, theoretically, flexibility to move him. And then they could designate it as a post-June 1st situation, much like the Eagles are going to do with A.J. Brown, and spread the cap hit over 2 years. It's actually not that massive of a cap hit in 2026. It's only about $23.5 million. Even 2027 is doable, under $28 million. 2028 is only about $30 million. The cap hit really jumps in 2029 when it's $64 million. So for the foreseeable future, you can manage to get him under the cap. So you ask what teams would be interested in getting Garrett. I'm obviously biased to some degree, but I think that Howie Roseman, who loves to be creative and who I know has wanted Myles Garrett in the past, who wouldn't? I think that the Eagles, frankly, would be smart to make a move and try to make a deal for him. They just made a deal during the draft for Jonathan Greenard from the Vikings. They got a little edge help there. They've got Jalix Hunt, who they're, you know, optimistic about, but they could use more help. And, you know, getting Myles Garrett, I think, will make a lot of sense for a lot of teams. But I'm very intrigued by Howie Roseman and just kind of how he operates in the shadows and loves making a big splash. So maybe the Eagles are a team that would make a play for him. The Eagles have plenty of draft picks, so I don't think draft pick compensation would be a massive hurdle for them, even though you have to give up premium capital. But this is a fascinating development because Todd Monken is new. He's looking to build something. You've got an incredible asset that could recoup premium draft picks in Myles Garrett. You're not going to win with Myles Garrett this year. You didn't win with him last year, the year before. So why not at least entertain the idea of getting draft picks that could help you build this thing over the next 2 or 3 years?
Color me shocked. Manish thinks the Philadelphia Eagles are a great fit for the reigning defensive player of the year. I'm not even going to sit here and pretend to be biased and say the Patriots are going to be a good fit. Yeah, they would be a massively good fit for him, but they're not going to have the pieces to be able to go out and get a Myles Garrett, especially with the A.J. Brown trade potential looming here in the next couple of days. I will say you kind of touched on a point that I just wanted to reiterate, and you're talking about a premium asset, and asset management for these general managers and these NFL franchises, if done right, look at, I'll even go a page out of your book, Howie Roseman, asset management. That's why he's considered one of the best, if not the best, general manager in the NFL. But moving on from a player that isn't necessarily going to help you contend for a title at this stage is smart. And it doesn't necessarily apply to Myles Garrett, but moving on from a player a year too soon rather than a year too late to ensure that you can recoup high premium draft picks to allow your franchise to have this continuity and to continue to build would be a smart thing. So if the Cleveland Browns are smart, they're gonna find a suitable trade partner and be able to get this deal done one way or another. But I briefly mentioned it with the Patriots, but I want to move on to the latest in what has been the discussion of the offseason, and that is the A.J. Brown potential trade update to New England. It came out just today. I mean, we had some new news today from friend of the pod, friend of the show, Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, coming out basically saying that the Patriots and the Eagles are not close on compensation for A.J. Brown at this point. The Eagles want a one. The Patriots don't want to give up a one. So there seems to be maybe some doubt that this thing is going to get done in 5 days, 6 days. It may take longer. I wish Ian gave us that nugget last week when we were on the podcast, but that's a story for another day. But Manish, what do you think about this? This is our two favorite teams trying to negotiate this trade. I think both of us want what's coming our way. I want the player, you want the draft picks, but what do you make of this recent development from Ian?
I think that when it's all said and done, as others have said, that New England Patriots will give up adequate compensation to Howie Roseman. Now, one thing to consider is that Howie Roseman loves winning trades. And that sounds silly on the surface, because what general manager wouldn't like winning trades? But that perception that he has built, you talked about him arguably being the best general manager in football. I think that title, that unofficial label, really matters to Howie Roseman, because he has done some incredible trades over the last 3 or 4 years. You know, he had a period of time where he had a lot of missteps, specifically in the draft, but then he has been on this massive heater for the last several years. I know that he loves when people praise him, both locally and nationally. And if there is any doubt that he did not win this A.J. Brown trade, I don't think he's going to do it. Now, ultimately, I think that the teams can, you know, finagle it enough where it is a quote-unquote win-win. So maybe it's a draw. Maybe it's not a slam dunk victory for Howie Roseman in this trade with the Patriots. And I think ultimately that will manifest itself in it being a 2028 first-round pick from New England. And sure, would you like to have the 2027 first-round pick when all accounts are that it's a deep, rich draft? Of course you would. But if nobody is willing to offer you a 2027 first-round draft pick, if the market is telling you that is not A.J. Brown's value, I believe Howie Roseman's smart enough to take the best offer on the table. Now, it's not going to be some garbage valued pick like a second or third rounder and that's it. Because if that were the case, then Howie Roseman should keep A.J. Brown. But I don't think that's going to be the case. If there's a high-level player involved with a second-round pick, I think that could make sense. I don't believe the Patriots have that type of player. But one of the teams mentioned recently was the Jacksonville Jaguars. That may be a dead issue. But it's interesting conversation. It's the interesting fodder when you perhaps say that Brian Thomas could be involved. And I don't care that the Eagles traded for Dontavian Wicks and they signed Hollywood Brown and Elijah Moore. Those guys are largely irrelevant in my mind. They're okay players at this stage at best. To me, Brian Thomas has a pedigree and he's young enough where he can still be a difference-making player. Clearly, the Jaguars are open to moving him. If the Eagles could get Brian Thomas and a 2027 second-round pick from Jacksonville, to me, that would be the trade, frankly, that would make most sense. I don't know how the Eagles value Brian Thomas, but I'm looking at this from the outside in, and that to me is a fair offer if you're not going to get a 2027 first from anybody. The bottom line is the market will tell you what A.J. Brown's value is, and the longer you hold on to A.J. Brown on your roster, you can open up the door for potential injuries in the offseason. You've seen that across the league. It's unfortunate, but it does happen. And maybe a team that isn't currently interested in giving up sufficient draft capital for A.J. Brown becomes interested. So I don't think there's really any harm in holding on to A.J. Brown, frankly, until training camp begins. I do think, however, you have to move him before early mid-July when training camp opens up. Clearly, the Eagles are of the mindset that A.J. Brown is not a part of the equation. He's not taking part in OTAs. And Jaylen Brown.
My goodness, you got Boston on your mind.
Jalen Hurts was asked about A.J. Brown today. He essentially sidestepped the question, talked about how the focus now is learning Sean Mannion's offense. That's not something that A.J. Brown's going to have to worry about because he's not going to be a part of the Philadelphia Eagles. Ultimately, Howie Roseman's going to make a deal. I think the Patriots will make the offer that's most appealing to Howie Roseman. Maybe that's not the best offer from other people's perspectives, but when it's all said and done, Elliott Wolf, Howie Roseman will make a deal. The notion that they're far apart at this point doesn't really matter to me, because I've seen negotiations where teams and players are far apart, and then within 24 hours, a deal gets done. So I don't take much stock in that. I think there's truth in it, but I also know that these types of negotiations change pretty quickly.
You know, I've been thinking on this for some time now, and the idea of a conditional draft pick here, I feel like, is going to be maybe the compromise that these teams need to make. And when I say compromise, or conditional pick. I'm sorry. You know, looking at the Patriots don't want to give up a 2028 first. Fine. Understandable. Make it a conditional first, or it's a second. So a conditional second, I guess, is how you would phrase it. Conditional second round pick in 2028. If AJ Brown plays a certain number of snaps for the Patriots, to basically cover the Patriots in the event that there is a significant injury or something like that that occurs to AJ Brown, and maybe there's a sweetener draft pick, like a third or fourth round pick over the course of those 2 years to kind of bridge that gap. Like it seems to me like something along those lines is where we could very well see this thing kind of, you know, shake out when all said and done. But that's enough about the AJ Brown Patriots Eagles talk. I mean, it's Patriots Eagles, it's Venetian Burge. We could go on and on and debate the Patriots and the Eagles here, but we're going to save that for the regular season, because we've had some really good debates about the Patriots and Eagles and where their records end up shaking out come the end of the 2026 season. So there's a little bit of a teaser coming into the future.
You know, the funny thing about this, it's obviously going to happen. So we'll talk about it after it becomes official. There's just always a lot of drama before something that's so clear to virtually everybody happens. And this is going to happen. So all of the drama and the storylines about being far apart, not being far apart, other teams potentially jumping in, to me, it's largely nonsense. I've seen this movie before. He's going to be a New England Patriot. What the compensation is exactly is unknown at this point, but the storylines make for conversation on text chains, on podcasts, on television. At the end of the day, I think anybody who follows the NFL understands that AJ Brown will be a New England Patriot.
And the Twitter banter between Patriots and Eagles fans has been a phenomenal read. Them basically going at each other nonstop. So go out there and check it out, even if you're not a fan of these two teams, because these two fan bases are really, really getting nasty with each other. But let's move it along. Another headline that's come up, you know, it's been out for a little bit, but, you know, there's been some recent developments, and that's with Texas Tech quarterback Brendan Sorsby. The NCAA has denied his reinstatement, you know, following, you know, Sorsby's problems with gambling addiction and, you know, basically he's not going to be playing in college football next year. Now, this was a guy who was a top prospect, looking into the 2027 draft. Doesn't look like he's going to be a top pick at that point. But it does look like he could be headed for the NFL's supplemental draft. Nish, you want to give us some background on that?
I love this. This is such an intriguing story. Now, what's unfortunate is what caused this, and Brendan Sorsby has admitted that he has a gambling addiction. I think he recently completed inpatient treatment for his gambling addiction, and he said as much on social media this week that he's got a long way to go. So I applaud him for taking ownership of this and taking real steps to, I don't know if the right way of saying is eradicating, you know, this part of his personality. But, you know, gambling addiction is a very serious problem, and he's clearly taking it seriously. The fallout, of course, is that it looks like his NCAA career is over. Now, there will be appeals from Texas Tech, I believe, after the NFL denied the NCAA denied reinstatement. I don't think that's really going to go anywhere. So I believe that he ultimately will be available in the supplemental draft, and that opens up opportunity. I really think from a football perspective, this opens up an opportunity for some smart GM out there to take him. Now, you're not going to use a first and second round pick, or probably not even a third round pick. For people who are unfamiliar, if you use a first round supplemental pick on a player, you will lose that first round pick in the subsequent NFL draft. So if you took Sorsby, for example, in the first round of the supplemental draft, you would forfeit your 2027 first round pick. Clearly, no NFL team is going to do that, but you can essentially get Sorsby on a discount. He was one of the quarterbacks in this group of the 2027 quarterback class that people have been touting now for over a year. And what he ultimately becomes, who knows? He's transferring from Indiana to Texas Tech. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. But the skill set is clearly there. And if you're a general manager who, A, absolutely needs a quarterback, or B, wants to take a chance on Sorsby to potentially develop into a franchise quarterback while you currently have a established quarterback, this is a great time for you. This is a great opportunity. If you use a fourth or fifth round supplemental draft pick on Brendan Sorsby, why not take that chance? And I think the Arizona Cardinals, New York Jets absolutely should take that chance. I don't think it would preclude them, frankly, from drafting a quarterback in the first round of the 2027 draft. You can absolutely do that. If you go back in history, Troy Aikman was the number one pick for the Dallas Cowboys, and they were unsure of Aikman, so much so that they drafted Steve Walsh in the supplemental draft. People don't remember that. So certainly younger people don't remember that, but they had two quarterbacks, and ultimately the cream rose to the top, and that was Troy Aikman. But they had two quarterbacks at a time when Jimmy Johnson was unsure who the best quarterback on their roster was. Was it Walsh? Was it Troy Aikman? So this is kind of in reverse, where you draft the Sorsby in the supplemental draft, and then you can draft an Arch Manning with the first or second or third pick in the 2027 draft. And that's why I mentioned the Cardinals and the Jets. But there's also another team, and I'm not showing my bias here. I think I'm
here we go.
I want to open people's eyes to how creative Howie Roseman is and how forward-thinking he is. He drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round right after he had paid big money to Carson Wentz, who everybody thought was going to be the franchise quarterback. Now we're in a position where Jalen Hurts is not getting a contract extension. There are real questions about whether he can thrive in Sean Mannion's West Coast-based offense. Why not take a flyer on Brendan Sorsby in the fourth or fifth round of the supplemental draft? I think that would be an absolutely ingenious move by Howie Roseman to do. That wouldn't necessarily put pressure on Jalen Hurts in 2026, or additional pressure, I should say, because there's plenty of pressure without the presence of Sorsby. But if you can get a guy in your pipeline at a discount, essentially would be a day three pick on a normal draft, why not do it? And frankly, I'd be very surprised if the Eagles aren't at least exploring that option, because in addition to these teams who have no franchise quarterback, like the ones I mentioned earlier, smart teams where they're unsure about the long-term future of their current quarterback, like the Philadelphia Eagles, Sorsby makes a lot of sense to take a chance on in the supplemental.
I cannot deal with the gloating about Howie Roseman. We've talked about him so much.
I mean, even I gave him his props, but
we give him his props, and it's all of a sudden this is turning into a Philadelphia Eagles podcast. I think I'm going to be sick.
The Philadelphia Eagles have the best general manager in football. I think that's pretty clear based off of the decisions and the moves that he's made over the last several years. I'm not a homer. Anybody who knows me, anybody
could have fooled me.
Any friend of mine on a text chain of Eagles fans will tell you that I'm probably the most critical Eagles fan amongst the group of people that I know, but I'm also fair. And when a guy is exceptional at his job, I give him credit. And, you know, I'm critical of Nick Sirianni, critical of Jalen Hurts, critical of other players, but you'd be hard pressed for me to find a negative thing to say over the last several years about Howie Roseman and also their defensive coordinator, Vic Fangio.
I don't know. Your friends might be looking at a new Manish come the next NFL season here with the amount of good stuff you're saying about them. I mean, I was there. I'll give you your props about how critical you were of Jalen Hurts last year. I was there, but I'm hearing a turn here. I'm hearing a little bit of a change. So
trust me, they start off 3-5. You're gonna hear.
I'm gonna be gloating. I'll be gloating. We can bash the Eagles together, and I'll be happy. We'll do that. Last headline I really want to talk about before we get into, we just want to talk about a couple of bounce back candidate teams here to kind of close out the episode. I really want to hit on the Jackson Dart, Abdul Carter, Giants locker room drama that kind of unfolded over the last week. And it played out publicly, courtesy of social media. and how easy it is for, you know, players and everybody else to put all their thoughts in their head right out there for the world to see. But basically, the too long didn't read recap of what happened. Jackson Dart was invited by the president of the United States to introduce him at some rally. I'm not sure exactly what it was. I just saw the clip of it. And Abdul Carter was not happy about it. He was not happy about it. And he took to social media, to Twitter specifically, to discuss it. And before I give it your way, Manish, you know, without diving too far into politics, because that's not what we do here on Between the Tackles. I don't think anybody wants to hear anybody's personal political views here. But anytime, like, regardless of who sits in that office, if you're asked to go to have the honor to introduce the president of the United States, regardless of who it is, like, nobody, in my opinion, should be taking heat for doing that. So I just want to say that. Manish, I'll kick it to you.
I think this entire story just speaks to Abdul Carter's immaturity. And again, Bingo. This isn't about your political beliefs. Regardless of whether I agree or disagree with Jackson Dart's political beliefs, it's his decision. You know, if he believes in Donald Trump and he wants to support Donald Trump by introducing him at a rally, that's his right, regardless of whether I agree or disagree with it. But to take it publicly, to me, just speaks to Carter's immaturity, frankly. And that's okay. You know, when we were in our early 20s, I think most of us were immature in a lot of different ways. And some people are immature throughout their 20s and into their 30s. So there's, you know, there's room and there's space for Carter to grow and learn. I just don't quite understand the logic taking this public. If you have an issue with a teammate about their political beliefs, clearly Carter did, why not just reach out to him privately, call him, text him, do whatever, you know, 20-somethings do to connect with other 20-somethings so that, you know, thousands of people who don't know either person hear about it. And then they chime in and it's an echo chamber. And then, you know, one person, you know, gives a volatile opinion. And then another person gives an opposing opinion. And the next thing you know, you have random people shouting at each other on social media. And it has nothing to do with Jackson Dart or Abdul Carter. And then a few hours later, Carter goes publicly, or maybe it was the next day, I can't remember, and essentially tries to gaslight people by saying, well, you can have whatever narratives you want. Well, that's not really a narrative. That's not really the definition of the word narrative. People were just responding to one teammate calling out another teammate over that teammate's political views. And, you know, I'm of the belief that nobody's right or wrong. I don't think there's a wrong side. You know, without getting into details, I've always respected the other side. I think that, you know, if there was more collaboration in this country, there would be a lot less vitriol and division. And the idea that a player supports Donald Trump should not incite this social media storm or this division and these arguments, it's patently ridiculous to me. And I have seen players and coaches support Donald Trump at rallies and introduced Donald Trump at rallies. I believe Rex Ryan introduced Donald Trump at a rally when Rex was the Buffalo Bills coach. I've known players and have a lot of respect for players on both sides of the political aisle. Everyone's entitled to their political opinions. You know, you may disagree with it, and it's fine. You can disagree with it. You can have private conversations with people on the other side of the aisle, but to take it public and to act as if Dart had done something wrong just because you did not share his political belief, to me, again, just speaks to the player's immaturity. And hopefully he grows and evolves. You remember Abdul Carter's also the player who reportedly missed a meeting because he was sleeping in a trainer's office or a trainer's table. And then he tried to clean up that mess and that didn't really work well. I think he's got a lot of growing up to do, and I think there's a lot of time for him to do that. But, you know, basically putting Jackson Dart on blast because you disagree with him politically is kind of ridiculous.
I'm just going to say, you said one thing there about respecting the other side. I need to hear a lot more Patriots respect on this podcast this year from you, because I had to endure a lot of Patriots disrespect over the last year. But again, discussion for July, August, September, and October, and I can't wait for it. I want to move us in. We're talking about the Giants with this whole thing, but I want to get in and start talking about, just to close out the episode, three teams that we here on the podcast have some opinions about bouncing back in a somewhat big way, a la New England Patriots of 2025. Manish, kick us off with the first team on this list. It's the New York Giants.
Yeah, let's just keep with the Giants theme here. 4-13 last year, complete train wreck. Brian Daboll fired before the season ended. The questions in the offseason about Joe Shane's future before they extended him, I believe a week or so ago. I think they hit the jackpot hiring John Harbaugh. And then I think John Harbaugh really made some shrewd decisions in terms of who would be the play callers on both sides of the ball. And Matt Nagy, offensive coordinator, who actually got the best out of Mitch Trubisky as a rookie in Chicago, is going to really help Jackson Dart's development. Denard Wilson is their defensive coordinator. I've seen Wilson up close and personal as a position coach with the New York Jets. And I can tell you that he was one of the most respected coaches in that building. I think that what Wilson does is really toe a fine line between being firm and having an old school element to his coaching style, but also garnering respect from younger players. That's hard to do. You know, you've got this school of thought that you can't be tough on players, because players nowadays will just kind of curl up, turtle up, not respond to that type of coaching. I've seen Denard Wilson up close and personal in practices really get after players, but he does it in a way that allows players to voice their opinions, give him feedback so that the player and then ultimately the team can benefit the most. I just think he's a brilliant coach. And I think if you talk to other coaches who have been around him through the years, dating back, with Browns, Jets, the Titans, obviously the Ravens with Harbaugh earlier, talking to coaches and players will tell you all universally that there's something about him that brings out the best in guys without being soft. He's not soft. He's not a pushover. I just love his style of coaching. I've always loved his style of coaching. I've told him that in the past. I think he is going to really help improve this defense. So you've got the two coordinators in place. You've got an incredible leader in John Harbaugh. I don't believe that they're going to win the NFC East this year. I did say on an earlier podcast that I think they'll be in first place about midway through the season when they hit their bye. Ultimately, though, I don't see them winning the division. If they did, it wouldn't surprise me. The NFC East typically is a seesaw type of division. The last 2 years, the Eagles have won. But prior to that, there had been a different winner in the NFC East dating back to 2004. So essentially two decades of a different team winning that division. So it wouldn't surprise me. I wouldn't predict it. But ultimately, I think the Giants are going to bounce back in a big way. They have a couple hurdles to clear. I think chief among them is how healthy Malik Nabers will be. He's coming off an ACL injury that Harbaugh said wasn't your typical injury. He had a second procedure to get rid of some scar tissue. We don't know how healthy he'll be when the season begins. Ultimately, though, I do think he'll hit his stride. He's going to be a dynamic weapon for Jackson Dart. Cam Scatabo also obviously coming off season-ending surgery. So these are some real concerns, but they added some really good pieces. Tremaine Edmonds, Isaiah Likely on the offensive side of the ball was their splash free agent signing. Arvell Reese, Francis Mauanoa, their two top 10 picks in the draft, really key additions. I think they're going to help out, make immediate contributions, pay dividends right off the jump. That's why I think, you know, this 4-13 team can easily be over 500 in a few months.
Yeah, I'm not as bullish on the Giants making a massive turnaround, but like you said, they've added the right pieces in there. They've added the experienced head coach. There were some, a little bit of discouraging reports about Malik Nabers, which was interesting to see. And who knows about Cam Scatabo, talking about going for 2,000 yards, all this and that. I mean, I like the confidence, but the division is one of the more difficult divisions to play in. You got a lot of talent there, you know, with the Dallas Cowboys, the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm not gonna praise them too much, but you know they are there and they are a good team. So it'll be interesting to see if they can kind of replicate what, you know, similar to what the Patriots did last year and kind of make a run at the division title. I'm going to move on to the second team. I talked about them on last week's schedule episode, and it's the New Orleans Saints. I really like what the New Orleans Saints have done this offseason. They finished last year with Kellen Moore and Tyler Shuck at quarterback, you know, winning four of their last five games. They really went into the offseason kind of on a really good note. And they made some really good additions. They bring in Travis Etienne. They, you know, they address their offensive line by signing David Edwards from Buffalo, which was a big need. And the move that I love the most is using their first round pick on Jordan Tyson, who I think is going to be a significant or strong offensive rookie of the year candidate next year. You know, pairing him with Chris Olave, giving and putting the weapons around. You know, Tyler Shuck entering into this season. They're really intrigued. I think they're really going to challenge for the divisional title in the NFC South. Now, granted that we know what that division is, it's kind of been a dumpster fire of late. I don't expect the Saints this year to blow anybody away, but I do expect them to finish atop the division and get some playoff experience for the first time under Kellen Moore.
Yeah, and if ever there was a division that was ripe for the taking, it's the NFC South. Three of the last 11 seasons, a team with an under 500 record has won that division. So even if you look at
they will finish over 500. They will finish over
500. Okay, all right. Well, last year we had 3-8-9 teams, and the Saints were 6-11. So they actually weren't that far off, and they were pretty hot down the stretch. They won four of their last five games, including two division wins over the Bucs and the Panthers. So I like that. They ended Kellen Moore's season strong. Now, I don't necessarily believe in momentum 6, 7, 8 months later, but I like that they showed that they can win games with what Kellen Moore is selling. And Tyler Shuck, now, I wasn't a big believer in him, a second-round pick. I thought he was destined to be a backup, and maybe that's the case, but he really took care of the ball down the stretch in his last five starts, only two interceptions, so that's something he can hang his hat on as well. When you look at their schedule, you know, as we talked about on the schedule show, I take a lot of stock and strength of schedule based on Vegas win totals for the opponents. And when you look under that umbrella, the Saints have the second easiest schedule in the NFL. So it's right there for them. They have a real opportunity to improve offensively because of Jordan Tyson, who I think is going to take a little bit of pressure off of Chris Olave, who was their go-to guy, you know, time and time again down the stretch last year. I think a little bit of diversity will help the quarterback, will help Kellen Moore. And I like this pick. I mean, I liked what you said last week about how they could surprise people. And again, it's a notoriously weak division. It's not as if they're playing in the NFC West against some heavy hitters. So definitely a team that I think can bounce back, be a dark horse, and surprise some people.
Absolutely. Who we got for the third and final team?
My favorite team, my Super Bowl team. Frankly, it's probably my Super Bowl winning team. I have not predicted a Super Bowl winner yet, but this is my AFC Championship team. It's a team that everyone falls in love with in May and June because of one person, and it's Joe Burrow. So I'm taking the Cincinnati Bengals. They did not make the playoffs last year, but this is how favorable Vegas views them. They are favored in 15 of their 17 games, which is remarkable when you consider they missed the playoffs last year.
Wow.
Yeah, and Burrow, look, Burrow, you know, two of the last 4 years have been banged up, missed half of last season. He's going for an unprecedented third comeback player of the year award. It's an award that I know that he has disdain for because it means that he didn't succeed the year before, and he's a two-time NFL comeback player of the year winner. He has joked about that in the past. I think he's going to win it again because I think he's the probably the best pure passer in the NFL. And if he can play a full 16 games, their offense is going to be electric. I, you know, the big question mark, of course, for them was their defense a year ago. They lose Trey Hendrickson, so you can't fully discount losing a player of that ilk, but they did add Dexter Lawrence in that trade in which they gave up their first round pick to the New York Giants. In free agency, I thought they did a terrific job. They added safety Brian Cook on a 3-year deal. They added pass rusher Boye Mafe from Seattle, who was going to help them out. In the second round of the draft, they added Texas A&M edge rusher Cassius Howell, who I was big on in the run-up to the draft. So they've added some really quality pieces on the defensive side to where I think they're going to go from, you know, a bottom five defense to a middle of the pack defense. And frankly, middle of the pack is really all that they need. When you have Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and the rest of that weaponry on the offensive side, if you just have a passable defense, you can make a lot of noise. I think they're going to win the AFC North. I think they're going to be a team to be reckoned with. And if Joe Burrow plays the entire season, and I understand that it's a big if given his recent history, but if that happens, they are a dangerous team that, frankly, I cannot see any other team in the conference beating.
It would be interesting for me, too. Obviously, we've seen a different side of Joe Burrow in some media after the season, kind of. I don't even know how I would describe it, but down, just doesn't look like he's having fun. And obviously when you're coming off all those injuries and what you're dealing with and, you know, having to deal with that putrid defense and an offensive line that's getting him killed, I'd probably feel that way too, knowing his potential and where that team has gone in the past and where they could go in the future. But I am with you with the fact that if he stays healthy, they're an instant contender out of the AFC, you know, with the New England Patriots, with the Buffalo Bills. I frankly would put them at, they're ahead of the Ravens. It's in the Steelers. I'm not high on them next year. So I think you're onto something, you know, pending the big if with Joe Burrow staying healthy.
Yeah. If he's healthy, look, they fall out of bed and score 30 points. And, you know, at best they could average 34, 35 points a game. They're that dangerous. You know, I didn't even mention T. Higgins and Chase Brown by name, but those guys on any other team would be superstars. And they are stars on some level. But when you've got those types of options and a quarterback like Joe Burrow, you're not going to be stopped. You're just not. I mean, this is a team, again, that will consistently, I believe, score over 30 points a game. And they will... They will run through the AFC. They're favored in 15 games for a reason. I don't think they're going to finish 15-2, but this is a team, 12, 13 wins. I would frankly be shocked if they won fewer than 12 games if Burrow plays the entire season with a realistic expectation, frankly, of 13 or 14 wins. They're just a dangerous team. They're a team that's been on the cusp and a team that's been frustrated because Burrow hasn't been available. They know the talent that they have on offense. All they needed was to upgrade on defense. I think they did that enough where this is going to be the best team in the AFC. And by the time the season rolls around, I might think that they're the best team in the NFL.
All this talk about these teams bouncing back makes me wish we weren't at the end of May. It makes me wish we were at the end of July because I'm ready, starved for football season, Manish. You want to? You got anything else you want to hit on before we close this one out?
Yeah, well, I want to enjoy the Jersey Shore for the next few weeks, so I'm not in a hurry for the NFL season to begin. I kind of want to enjoy the time with my family, but your point is well taken. The NFL season is the anticipation is always exciting, and it rarely fails to deliver. But yeah, that'll do it for us. Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button, leave a 5-star rating, write a review. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on TikTok, Instagram, at Tackles Pod. Be sure to hit the subscribe button for YouTube as well. We're trying to grow our presence there. And your feedback always goes a long way to helping us grow. We engage. And if you're liking the content, please drop us a line. If you have any suggestions, drop us a line. We're willing to improve and listen to, you know, what you have to say.
If you think I'm an idiot, tell me, please. I want to hear it.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, if you think I'm an idiot, don't tell me. I've heard that enough through the years.
Yeah.
I definitely don't need to hear more of it, but that'll do it for this episode. For Burge, I'm Manish. We'll see you next time.